Welcome to Pod Revisited, episode 64. I'm Tori.
And I'm Shay.
Today we are covering chapter 4 of Goblet of Fire, Back to the Burrow.
Or, as we like to call it, family values.
So, covering from the end of last chapter, Harry is going to the Burrow and he's going to stay there for the rest of the summer holidays and he's going to go see the Quidditch World Cup. And the Weasleys are supposed to be picking him up at 5 o'clock. On this day. And I'm just wondering, why did the Weasleys not clarify how they were gonna pick Harry up? Because I feel like that's an important fact to know.
Honestly, Harry should probably have told the Weasleys a little bit about, like, maybe how they should arrive or dress in order to fit in and not offend the Muggles or the neighborhood too much. But also, I guess it's not entirely on Harry because he's 14.
Yeah.
And the Weasleys, well, Mr. and Mrs. Weasley are adults and probably should have been a bit more organized. That feels like the type of thing they should have done. Especially like the arrival and the lack of communication about flu powder and clothing. It seems very, very ill thought out. And I feel like the Weasleys are kind of more fly by the seat of their pants or make it up as we go along, cough, cough, Gryffindor type of people. So they just don't think those things through.
Well, Harry's preparing to be picked up. Dudley's very, like, scared and he's all worried because, going back to the first book, Hagrid gave him a pigtail. So Dudley's kind of terrified of wizards and magic because for him it had, like, severe physical consequences, and it's kind of played as like a funny gag of him like walking around holding his butt.
Yeah,
but like this is like kind of some serious trauma.
Yeah,
that Dudley has. Like, we've talked about how Hagrid probably shouldn't have done that, or at least removed the pig's tail.
You shouldn't use transfiguration on students. It's against the rules, and I'm sure it's even more so a rule for Muggle children.
You're just not finding it like funny as I did as a kid. Which is a lot of things in this chapter.
I think the visual is kind of funny of him, like, covering his butt and, like, keeping his back to the wall.
Yeah.
But the actual underlying thing of, like, he was magically mutated, he had to get surgery at a Muggle hospital, like, the shame his parents must have looked at him with while he had the tail, just, like, a whole lot of issues. So, understandably, he's pretty uncomfortable with wizards.
And another thing is, Mr. Weasley, like, he knows all about Muggles, or he tries to know all about Muggles, but if Muggle houses aren't connected to the flu network, because they're not supposed to be, wouldn't he know that there might be some issues with connecting it? He just assumed that it would work?
I mean, I guess it's sort of like a huge learning leap, going from learning about something from, like, a textbook or observing it to actually living it. Like, I can understand how he'd be like, I know a lot about Muggles. I learned that they don't use flu. I learned this. But there's probably just, like, his brain probably can't imagine why they would have something electrical, like a fake fireplace in a fireplace, when you could just have a fireplace with real fire. That is the point of fireplace. Like, if you actually think about it, it's kind of dumb, especially in the time period where it's not like it was illegal to have a fireplace in your house or something. So it's a dumb thing to do, realistically. So, like, I can understand why he wouldn't imagine that.
Yeah, it just feels like it's very, like, ill thought out. Like you said, they kind of just, like, go, they just kind of do.
Yeah, they're not warning the Muggles about the fireplace.
But the thing is, like, Mrs. Weasley went through the effort to actually mail the Dursleys, like, a letter. So you feel like if they're going to do that, you might as well do, like, the whole thing properly. But, you know.
It's not so much the fireplace being blocked. That seems like something he should have forethought, because, again, fake fireplaces in real fireplaces is dumb. But I think that maybe the problem is that he didn't communicate anything effectively with the Dursleys. Like, he should have said, we will be traveling via your fireplace, or, like, this is how we're going to get there, just so they, like, know what to expect.
Or just telling Ron to tell Harry, because Harry knows things, and
yeah,
they remember the last time they taught him flu powder. Like,
yeah, I feel like even not knowing the intricacies of Muggle culture, knowing that Muggles don't fully understand wizarding culture, should be enough to know that you should explain things a bit ahead of time just to prepare them, I think. Just lightly.
Well, the big commotion of this chapter is that the Weasleys Bubby, Arthur, the twins, and Ron, flew into the fireplace, but it's boarded up. So Mr. Weasley, of course, has to, you know, just blast his way into the Dursleys' living room.
Blowing a hole in their wall, destroying some of their furniture, making a mess.
Yeah, and just covers everything, and yeah, it's a giant mess. And the Dursleys are obviously pissed.
Justifiably so.
And I don't actually blame them for that, because, like, yeah, he didn't, like, really tell than what the hell he was doing, and he just, you know, blew up their fireplace and part of the living room.
Yeah. Like, we know Sidealong apparition exists. Why did he have to bring three of his children along to collect Harry? And specifically, why did he bring the twins? That's asking for trouble. That is such a bad idea.
Yeah. I have a lot of things about Fred and George in this chapter and going into the next chapter, but basically, Fred and George are known for being pranksters, but, like, we see the Weasleys as good people, they're good kids, they're always on, like, the right side, they're Gryffindors, like, they're friends of Harry, so they're, like, they're good characters. But this prank on Dudley seems really cruel reading it as an adult, because they mention in the next chapter that they haven't tested this product they made.
They could have poisoned Dudley.
So, like, there were so many things that could have gone wrong. And obviously, Dudley is, like, mean to Harry and he's not a great kid.
Yeah.
But the thing is just, like, as a kid, I think reading this, it's like, haha, payback. But, like, as an adult, like there are so many variables that could have gone wrong here. And it's just kind of like you see the twins kind of being like this careless attitude they have. You can see the kind of like the other side of it, which isn't like how we usually see the twins portrayed.
Yeah, I agree. Just for context, Tori's referring to the Weasleys, Fred, I guess, drops a bag of candy on his way out of the Dursleys' house, and he collects it, but not all of it, knowing Dudley will eat some of it, and it's some of their Weasleys' wizard wheezes of... And, yeah, I feel like there's a lot of risk. It's a lot of risk, first of all, because he's leaving right after, and, like, Mr. Weasley's leaving, too. So if there was a delayed effect of whatever the treat did to Dudley, there's no wizard there to deal with the repercussions. Like, it's less dangerous with an adult trained wizard there who can at least administer basic magical medical care.
I feel like they did it because they knew Arthur was going to be there, and if it had been their mom, they never would have done it.
Oh, absolutely. Not because Miss Weasley couldn't heal Dudley, but because Miss Weasley would murder them.
Arthur kind of, like, yells at them in the next chapter, but, like, he yells at them, but that's kind of it.
His anger is not Miss Weasley's. Miss Weasley is more scared. She's scarier.
Yeah.
Arthur's a softball. Like, very wrong of you boys. Very wrong indeed. And then Miss Weasley shakes the floorboards when she yells, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Dudley could have died. He could have been poisoned. There's all kinds of terrible things that could have happened. And I think, I mean, the twins are 16, I guess.
Yeah.
So 16 is old enough to know you shouldn't, like, poison people.
Well, I feel like because they see Dudley as, like, less than. It was like they did it as also, like, a way to test their product, but also to kind of get back at Dudley for being mean to Harry.
I mean, there are probably safer ways, cute little magical tricks that are less risky than testing untested products on Dudley that you do not know how they're going to react when your family's only there for 3 minutes and leaving and he could be left untreated by magical aid. They certainly could have done something less risky.
Especially knowing, like, the Dursleys' dislike of magic, that's only going to, like, aggravate things. But the twins don't think long-term at this point. Like, they're 16, they're just like, it would be funny if we did this. And it's just like, at the moment, it's fun, but...
It's borderline, they're a bit old to be risking poisoning Dudley, but they're certainly the right age to not think ahead as far as the long-term repercussions for Harry.
Especially because, like... So my main thing is that, like, Dudley could have choked on his tongue because, like, Petunia's, like, yanking it on his tongue. It's getting so long that he's, like, choking on it. So, like, what would have happened if he, like, died? Because the Dursleys aren't letting Mr. Weasley near Dudley, which I get because, like, to them, magic's dangerous and like, this guy just burst into their house, blew up the living room, and then his kids left this candy that their son ate, and all of a sudden their son's, like, choking on this thing, and this guy's like, I can fix it!
Yeah, as far as they're concerned, Arthur Weasley was a part of poisoning Dudley, or putting that spell on him.
And, like, wizards to them are dangerous, so it's like, they're like, all right, we don't want any part of this.
And they're not disproving it. The Weasleys have not effectively disproven that.
Yeah.
They've destroyed the wall, the living room, and Dudley. In, like, 3 minutes.
Yeah, I think that Mr. Weasley brings up the idea that, like, about, like, muggle-wizard relations in the next chapter. But the thing is, like, the twins did it because the Dudley's mean and he's mean to Harry, and they just did it as a joke. But, like, to them, it's a joke. But, like, there's a lot of other context is to it. Like, the fact that Dudley's a muggle kid and has a fear of magic. You know, the fact that they gave him something that they hadn't tested. So, like, if, like it did work, but, like, what if it didn't work?
Yeah. And also, just, like, the broader context of, like, the Weasleys are shown as a very accepting wizard family. They love the idea of muggles. They're best friends with Hermione. She's muggle-born. But, like, using magic maliciously against muggles is, even if it's not just because they're muggles, it seems pretty close to going against the basic, like, to me, rules of respecting muggledom.
Especially muggles that have, like, a fear of magic. Like, obviously, Dursleys are awful, and there's a lot of other things that, like, they're terrible for. But, like, their fear of magic is definitely, like, I wouldn't say it's completely without cause.
But I kind of think, like, it feels unfair to use magic against muggles, specifically in this context. I kind of feel like if they had played a trick on Dudley that wasn't magical, like, if they'd done something not physically affecting him, there's things they could have done that are more fair. But this kind of, I think, borders on being, like, magical abuse of muggles. Even though I do not like Dudley, it's, the risks are too high. They have no magical means to cure it.
I feel like this definitely shows, like, the characterization of Fred and George in this book, where, like, they're kind of taking these kind of really crazy risks, and, like, they have the blackmail plot that goes on throughout the whole book and stuff, and they're just, like, it's a different side of the twins. We've always seen them as kind of, like, side characters who were, like, really funny, and they're always doing, like, silly shenanigans and stuff, but never really hurts anyone. But here's, like, the other side of the twins, where, like, they're taking risks, they're doing their own thing, and they don't really care what happens.
I also think an interesting way to look at the twins' behavior and things like this is take the action and the repercussions, and imagine if instead of the twins doing it, Draco Malfoy had done it.
Exactly.
It's borderline a hate crime if Draco does it, right? Because, I mean, his intentions would be different, but still, I think that's an interesting way to look at it, where, like, if the character Draco did something like that to a muggle child, everyone would immediately be up in arms about it. But because of, like, the way the Weasley twins are depicted as good guys and funny,
yeah,
that's how it's interpreted. But when you look at it from the perspective of, like, what if a character I don't just blindly trust as being good had done this, it's easier to understand how, like, I mean, their intentions were malicious. They were acting out against Dudley. They wanted him to suffer, to be punished, to in some way be embarrassed or hurt a little bit. I think that's an interesting way to do it, though, is always to, like, take an action that you're not sure about and put a character you don't like in the position of the one doing it.
It's a good way to view it through, like, an alternate lens. I think especially with this series where we have, like, the Gryffindors being, like, typical good guys and the Slytherins being typical bad guys. But if you look at the stuff they kind of do, it's like, well, if Draco or someone else did it, would it be still, would you be able to be, like, to write it off as, like, oh, well, they didn't mean it that way? I think especially with the twins, too, because the twins are kind of seen as just, like, very good.
Funny, lighthearted.
Yeah, like, good characters.
Like, if they had done it with the intention of being like, oh, I bet Harry's aunt and uncle will find this so funny, and they will laugh, and then once we bring Dudley back to normal, he too will laugh. Like, if they'd been really that wasn't their intention, though. There was no pure everybody's gonna laugh. It was bullying. They wanted Dudley to feel bad. They wanted them and Harry to enjoy Dudley feeling bad.
It's definitely played off as, like, just a funny joke in the next chapter. Like, Fred and George aren't really punished for it until Mrs. Weasley comes on. But it's just very much like, if they even talk after, like, the next chapter, it's just like, oh, they did this. Why did they do this? And then Mrs. Weasley comes in and yells at them about it. But yeah, it's definitely seen as the, like, a joke, and it's just reading it as an adult, I'm like, that's not a joke.
Yeah. I feel like the way, like, the Dursleys do sort of attack Harry in a lot of ways and, like, mistreat him. So I feel like if you had magical things you could give Harry that were, like, defensive, like, protect, like, a lock for his door the Dursleys couldn't open, or a way to protect his things from being damaged by Dudley or something, that's, like, a good and healthy way to use magic to help Harry to survive the Dursleys. But this is, like, combative. Like, it's a curse. It's not...
Yeah. And especially the idea that, like, they have not tested this. Like, I know in this book, they're, like, testing stuff on themselves, and it's, like, one thing to test it on yourselves, but especially, like, a muggle, too. Like, what if Muggles react differently to, like, magical, like, sweets and stuff? And they don't know that.
They have no idea.
Like, it's just so, it's just like the thing you would do as a kid. You just don't think about the repercussions. And we always talk about how Gryffindors don't think about, like, the long term. They only think about the now. This is the evidence.
This is that. They could have killed him and, like, feels like that's prison. 16 is old enough. I think they're going to Azkaban for war crimes against Muggles.
War crimes?
Okay, not war crimes, but still.
Well, yeah, Mr. Weasley does bring up next chapter that, like, it's like Muggle baiting, and it's just like he kind of spends his time stopping stuff like this.
And it's also, like, dangerous for him as someone who has a certain reputation in the ministry as being very, like, friendly to Muggles and encouraging of Muggle wizard relations. It's, like, politically bad for Mr. Weasley on top of all the other repercussions. Not that Mr. Weasley is concerned about his political standing, but Percy probably is.
So after, like, Fred and George give Dudley the sweet and they kind of peace out, and then his tongue swells, and then Mr. Weasley's trying to help Dudley, but obviously the Dursleys are kind of like, stay the hell away, like, what the hell did you do? They don't trust magic, especially now, and you can't really judge the Dursleys. Like, Vernon's throwing things at Mr. Weasley, and he's just kind of like, hey, stop, like, I'm trying to help you. But the thing is, like, they came into their house, just, they were late, obviously, they broke into their house, basically, like, exploded, like, their living room, and then their son is, like, choking on his tongue, and this is all because of magic, and it just kind of instills, like the thoughts they have about magic, that it's dangerous, and that the people are crazy, and it's gonna hurt them.
Yeah, and, I mean, we don't get a lot of, like, what Mr. Weasley is saying, but we do remember Sirius Black trying to calm down Harry, Hermione, and Ron in the last book while acting very aggressively and not saying the right things. And while I'm sure Arthur would be saying somewhat the right things, anything short of very clearly stating, my sons did that, it's a prank, it's not that dangerous, I can undo it, please allow me to, I will not harm you, isn't going to be absorbed at all, and they're just panicking, and he's shouting and pointing a wand at their son, you know? You've got to, like, calm them down and then get them to explain to them and hope that it absorbs. And I don't know if he explained himself well.
But, yeah, Mr. Weasley is getting Harry ready to go, and he's like, okay, say goodbye to, like, your aunt and uncle, and they don't have that relationship. And then Mr. Weasley's kind of being like, you're not going to see Harry for the rest of, like, the year, pretty much. Like, aren't you going to say goodbye to him? And kind of just slightly manipulating them to be like, this is not, like, very good behavior.
Yeah, I feel like Mr. Weasley is sort of forcing the Dursleys to say bye to Harry by making the alternative of not saying bye feel really, really awkward. And I think he's putting them in the position where they have to decide sort of between their two passions, holding up appearances and propriety versus just being jerks to Harry.
Yeah, Uncle Vernon, you see, kind of struggles with it, that he doesn't care about Harry, but, like, he doesn't want to be seen as, like, rude or, like, not socially, like, right. So
exactly. I wonder if anyone else ever calls the Dursleys out in sort of public situations when they're obviously neglecting or abusing Harry.
I don't know if it's public. I feel like at the end of Order of the Phoenix, they all kind of call the Dursleys out and being a terrible people. And maybe I think Dumbledore, when he has that sit down with the Dursleys at the beginning of Half-Blood Prince, he kind of, like,
scolds them. But I'd like to think that, like, if they're mean in public, there's a nosy neighbor who's like, don't you kick that boy, don't you be rude, you know?
Yeah, I don't feel like I ever do anything publicly. It's just very much in, like, their actions, but they don't want to be, like, socially, like, because I think there's one moment in, like, the first book where, like, they were getting ice cream.
Oh, he gets the lollipop.
Yeah, because the person had asked him, and they didn't want to say no in front of the person to seem like they're bad people, so they gave him, like, the cheapest thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So stuff like that.
So they're mean to Harry when it doesn't have social implications or reflect poorly on them, so in public.
Yeah.
I also think the thing that really stuck with me at the end of this chapter is, like, poor Tory has been excitedly waiting to get back to the Burrow since we left the Burrow the first time.
It's so close!
In book 2. And now, this chapter, titled Back to the Burrow, is not at all at the Burrow.
We're so close!
They're not there. We're in the Dursleys' living room.
Next chapter, we're getting there. I forgot how dragged out the first few chapters are of Goblet of Fire. I'm just like, I can't wait to get to the Burrow. And it's like, 4 chapters in and we're still not at the Burrow.
We'll get there one day.
So we made a kind of, like, a comparison of the Dursleys and the Weasleys with social priorities. as it's very clear in this chapter.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, we don't get to the Burrow yet, so there's parts of the Weasleys we don't necessarily see, but we know from previous books. And you do see a lot about how the Dursleys are in this chapter. So I just thought it's interesting to, like, look at the two families and sort of compare certain things. For example, I find it really interesting how the Dursleys are so focused on class as a representation of a person's quality.
Yeah.
You know, so like what the Weasleys wear or drive, that matters to the Dursleys to some extent. And I mean, the Dursleys still won't like the Weasleys because, as Harry said, even if they drove a Ferrari.
Because they're still wizards and they don't like wizards.
Exactly. But even in the Dursleys' minds, it's like there's a class lower than Muggles for wizards, and the subclasses will be determined by the car you drive, the money you make, and what you're wearing. And that's very, very interesting. And I think clothes and a car is kind of a dumb way to judge a first impression.
Well, like, they're very keeping up with the Joneses kind of family. Like, they're all about, like, just bettering themselves, like, yeah, having more money, more prestige to look better.
I do think that judging the Weasleys based on their lack of punctuality is kind of fair. I feel like making judgments when you first meet people is normal. We all sort of start forming opinions. And I think punctuality is something you, to some extent, have, like, control over. So I think that that's a more fair way to look at the Weasley interaction. And I'm sure it's part of why the Dursleys look at them the way they do. But it's more important to me as, like, a regular person than what car they drive up in.
I think it's, like, a respect thing. Like, they're, like, like, they're picking up this kid, but also, like, they're not on time, like...
Yeah. And if you're late, I feel like you apologize. You're like, I'm so sorry we were late. These fireplaces. Or something, you know?
It's like, oh, we showed up.
But it really shows who cares more and sort of how they interpret and judge things and what they value. So, like, Mr. Weasley does not try to appear particularly neat or organized. He doesn't dress up. He doesn't try to present himself as wealthy, and he doesn't seem to mind being late or non-punctual, but he's very polite and he's very friendly. You know, he's kind of chatty. He's excited about their light sockets.
Yeah.
He thinks electric fireplaces are cool. He'd like to know more about that. The Dursleys, on the other hand, they spent hours probably cleaning their living room, despite knowing that they were going to dislike the Weasleys. And then they sat in the living room sort of waiting for them for, like, well before they were expected to be there.
Well, it's how they wanted the Weasleys to see them. Like, Uncle Vernon dressed up in a suit, not because, like, he wanted to, like, look nice for Mr. Weasley, but because he wanted to look, like, impressive and, like, intimidating.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, meeting new people for the Dursleys is almost more of a performance or a display. Well, to the Weasleys, it's actually about the interaction. So, like, the Dursleys, though they didn't speak that much, were sort of monologuing about themselves. Like, this is our living room. This is our that. This is how nice I can dress. This is what they were doing. Well, the Weasleys were sort of asking questions and engaging and wanted more of a back and forth.
Yeah.
Which, again, speaks to their values of, like, status versus actual interaction behavior. So I sort of think it's interesting to think about them, like, Arthur and Vernon specifically, like, how would they introduce themselves? You know, what would they say about themselves? So to me, Arthur would probably say, hi, I'm Arthur. Maybe Arthur Weasley. But he's Arthur. And I'm a kind and loving father and husband, and I have a big interest in Muggle things. You know, something he's interested in, his family, that's what matters. And Vernon, on the other hand, is more of a, I am Mr. Vernon Dursley. I have a good job at the Jarrell Company, and I drive a very nice four-door sedan. In my neighborhood, my garden is seen as the best garden. Like, it's such a what I have versus who I am again. And it's really interesting to see those juxtaposed sort of values. With the Weasleys sort of, and the Dursleys, another way to compare them sort of and think is by comparing their two living rooms. We don't get the Burrow living room described in this chapter, but we know what it's like. So we have the Weasley's living room, which is this messy and cramped, but comfortable, lived in. Like, the furniture's soft because the kids have been playing on it and sitting on it for years. There's books lying around, there's blankets, there's games. The kids have left stuff everywhere. And it's got personal decor. It's got family photos, their family clock. People spend their time in the room doing things together, and it's a place to be comfortable together. And then the Dursleys have a living room that is sort of too clean in my mind. Like, I would not be shocked if they had those little, like, plastic things under the couch legs so you don't dent the carpet. They give off that energy.
Petunia definitely does that.
Yeah, yeah. And they have, so it's that clean, no dust, everything is organized, no clutter. The furniture in my mind is like stiff because no one lounges on their couch. They sit properly on their couch. So it's sort of stiff.
It's like a sitting room.
Exactly. And new. And I feel like the decor is like fancy and delicate, probably like impersonal, but like expensive looking and very like modern and on trend. It's a showroom to display the things that they can afford and how tidy and neat they can keep it, rather than a actual room for living.
We know Petunia is kind of like OCD, but like keeping her house like super clean and everything. Like Harry always describes her as like always cleaning. So it's like they're like the upper middle class family that wants to like work its way into like the upper crust of society. So they're always wanting to show off what they do have and like appear kind of like better than they are. Probably.
The Weasleys are definitely, with how the Weasleys spend their money when they have it, they spend it on experiences like Quidditch games and going on a trip to visit their son at his cool job site in Egypt. But the Dursleys are far more likely to try and get a newer model of a car or a nicer suit or a nicer church dress. So it's very interesting. So to quote Ron Weasley, they need to sort out their priorities.
Do you have any other points you want to talk about before we wrap up this chapter?
Yeah, so my thoughts are the Weasleys are not doing a good job of changing the perception that the Dursleys have of the wizarding world and of wizards. They come across as kind of pushy, messy, and combative in the fact that they literally were attacked. And the Dursleys are, behaving as expected. Like, I feel like this chapter ends and I almost feel a little bit disappointed in the behavior of all of the Weasleys.
Yeah.
And just like the Dursleys behaved as expected. Like, I'm not happy with them. They weren't nice. They weren't polite. They weren't any of those things.
Dursleys are still awful.
They weren't like, they behaved average. This is quite below average for the Weasleys. They were not on their best behavior, and I think maybe they should have tried to be.
Yeah, my thoughts are similar with like, just like the idea of, I think mostly of seeing Fred and George as good characters, but they're doing things that, reading it as an adult now, that I'm like, that's not like something like you should be doing, but they're still seen as good characters. So it's kind of seeing more of the gray area of Fred and George.
And the bias we have as readers, you know, we're willing to lap up and love and adore and laugh at anything the good guys do to such an extent that sometimes you have to stop yourself and say, no, that's not funny, that's mean.
Yeah, I feel like in this book, I'm definitely going to find a lot more issues with the stuff Fred and George are doing, like especially antagonizing Percy in this book, and also just like they have their whole blackmail plot as well. So there's a lot more kind of like gray area Fred and George content. Thank you for listening to this episode of Potter Revisited, and we'll be back next time to finally get back to the Burrow with chapter 5, Weasley's Wizard Wheezes. That's like a tongue twister. I can never say that.
That's going to be hard. Weasley's Wizard Wheezes.
3 W's. But if you have any thoughts on today's episode or previous episodes or anything coming up in the next few chapters, you can email us at podrevisitedpodcast@gmail.com or reach out to us on social media at podrevisited, and we will see you next time.
Bye.